Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program today. My guest is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, joining us by phone from his office. Before we get going today, we should point out that today's show has been pre-recorded with Mayor McBarnes, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls today, but do remember that you can email questions for any of our four mayors at any time to our address, ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Good to be with you, Stan. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Real quick, wanted to make sure that following up on last month's conversation, you were healing up okay, feeling better, I hope?
Feeling fantastic, yeah. I woke up over the weekend and told my wife, I said, I'm finally feeling like myself again. So, again, kudos to the Eskenazi Burn Center, and I'm happy to be at 100%. I'm ready to go.
All right, well, then let's get down to it. I wanted to start by talking about a couple of things that have gone on since our last conversation. You had one of your city's police officers have to resign recently after being charged with DUI. Is this the kind of thing that your department has a sort of zero-tolerance policy on?
Well, I think Mr. Hickson made the decision that he felt was best for he and his family, and it's not my place to second-guess that. So he felt as though it would be best to offer up a letter of resignation. That letter of resignation was accepted at our last Board of Works meeting, and we're moving forward. But you know, we do appreciate everything that he did for our city. He had many, many, many fine years of service here in the community, and we definitely appreciate all he did.
Now, you say resign. I mean, this seems to me like one of those things where I don't know what the internal politics of these things are, but in a lot of cases like this, this is kind of one of those you're asked to resign, otherwise something else might happen. Was this one of those situations?
Absolutely not. No, that's not how we operate. It's state statute dictates a very procedure-driven process when it comes to these things for police and fire. And the Board of Works, we can only receive information through executive sessions, through open public meetings. So no, absolutely not. Again, this was a decision that Mr. Hickson came to. He believed, I think, that it was the best decision for he and his family, and he offered that up, and the letter was accepted, and we move on at this point in time.
You've got a very small police force, but in just the last couple of years, this is at least the third officer who's left the force for one way or another because they've had some bad behavior or been charged with a crime or something like that. I mean, that's a significant portion of the force, even if you account for the people who have been rehired in that time, right?
Yeah, it's nothing that we wanted to see. Obviously, very, very disappointing, some of the decisions that have been made. And you know, I for one, just personally, I do believe that the public safety officials should be held to a higher standard. We are trusting in them to uphold law and order in our communities, and I believe that's a very sacred, solemn vow. Now, what these men and women, they go through every day, they see the worst of the worst of society, they're getting talked at like they're dogs most of the time, which is absolutely horrible, but that's what goes on, and I do ride along, so I see this firsthand. So I know that our officers, they face a lot mentally, and I think it's up to us. We have to do an even better job of making sure that they're receiving emotional support when they need it, from not only the administration, but from our community in general, and we want to build those bridges. But yeah, the decisions that have been made over the past 4 or 5 years by a select few officers, obviously not professional, so something that we do not like. But again, I think if you look at the whole of our department and you look at the young people that are coming in, you look at our seasoned veterans, these few decisions that have been made definitely don't reflect the whole of the department. We have dozens of men and women that are working hard every day, working professional every day, and doing a great job serving our community. And the crime numbers support that. Our unified crime reports have dropped significantly over the past 5 years. Crime is decreasing in the city of Frankfort. We're becoming more effective in drug arrests and disrupting illicit uses of substances and dealing of substances. And so I'm very proud of Chief Bacon, Deputy Chief Shoemaker, and I think we're going in the right direction. I do.
Let me ask you about that, because you've spoken highly of your chief, Troy Bacon, multiple times on this show and elsewhere. I have to ask, though, is there more that he could be doing to either weed out the bad apples who are on the force or make it clearer somehow that illegal behavior is not just a bad thing for law enforcement officers to be engaging in, but a punishable thing for them to be engaging in?
I don't think so. You know, here less than a year ago, our department went through a stringent process called Excellent Cultures, and we all came together and we looked at areas that we could progress within our department, and much of that has to do with leaning on team members, working for a team, representing this community in a professional manner. We can't control what people do in their off time. We can't control what they do when they go home and they get behind the walls of their home, or, you know, when they're on vacation somewhere. We just can't. It's impossible. I think human beings, we're sinners by nature. We make terrible decisions, and no one is immune from that. So I do not fault our chief. I do not fault our leadership. These were decisions made by individuals during their off time that, unfortunately, in some instances, had consequences. And that's a part of life, unfortunately, whether you're talking about police officers or whether you're talking about healthcare professionals. I don't care what area it is. We're all humans, and unfortunately, we make bad decisions. We do. And when that happens in the city, it's addressed, it's handled in a professional manner, and we move forward.
About 2 years ago, we talked on the show about two officers who at that time had been relieved of their duties basically simultaneously. And we talked a little bit about whether maybe more training was required to keep others who were still on the force on the straight and narrow. What are your thoughts on that now? You mentioned that the program you went through a little while ago. Is there a need now for a reinforcement?
Well, I'll tell you, and you look at the actions by certain individuals, and I think it's important to note none of those individuals were hired by this administration. They were hired by previous administrations. You know, we have a very stringent process through our pension board, through our board of works, that we're vetting individuals, and when they go through those polygraphs, when they go through those background checks, we're looking at key indicators, and if they've made certain decisions in their personal life before they take that oath of office, then, you know, we have severe reservations about that. So on the front end, I want our citizens to know that we do look at those things very heavily. And to this point in time, none of our new hires have made any of these decisions like the ones that we've been referring to. So I think a new culture is being built in the police department. I think a better vetting process on the front end when these individuals are hired are being carried out. And, you know, I think our officers now have a higher expectation of themselves, of our department, and what this community deserves. And that's reflected in the productivity, the crime numbers, the amount of arrests, and the overall efficiency of our department. We're seeing great strides in that right now.
You talked about it being a generally sort of stressful kind of job where in some cases the interactions that the officers have with the public are not the most savory they could be. And we talked a couple months ago on the show about how you're now asking officers on the heels of them getting a pay hike to do 12-hour shifts instead of 8-hour shifts. And so I got to thinking about that, and I wondered, you know, it would seem to me that that would probably lead to some amount of increased stress or fatigue to what is already a stressful job. I think you're right about that. But, and that, of course, you know, will make humans act differently, maybe adopt coping mechanisms here and there. Could the recent incident be related to the change in how the force is being asked to do its job?
Well, it's important to note that those 12-hour shifts, they won't go into place until January 1st of next year.
Okay.
So we are still working off the same shift schedule and structure that we always have at the police department. And when you look at moving to those 12-hour shifts, not only are we going to get more efficiency out of the force, we're going to have more officers on the street at a given point in time, but because of that shift structure, as a whole, those officers will get more time off to be with their families on consecutive days. And I've got to tell you, I have not had one officer approach me and say, this is a bad move. I have not one officer approach me and say that this was going to cause them more undue burden. And I feel like I would have honestly heard about that by now. That's why we wanted to take this to our force and present it to them before it got out in the public, because I think we owed them that. And so, not only are we going to have more officers on the street at a given point in time next year, which I think we'll see crime continue to go down because of that, and more drug arrests being made because we're going to have more boots on the ground, but at the same time, the amount of days they will have off consecutively, they'll get to spend more time with their family and hopefully have a little more normalcy in their lives. And it's important for them to have a balance, and we very much want them to have that.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Our show today has been pre-recorded, so we unfortunately cannot take your phone calls. But feel free at any time to send emails for any of our four mayors to ask@WBAA.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Speaking of people who have been removed from jobs, I apologize for that segue, but it seems appropriate. What led you to fire the president and the vice president of your Historic Preservation Commission?
Well, first, I do appreciate all of the work that those two gentlemen have put into this board, because they've dedicated a lot of their personal time to this venture and this initiative in our city when it comes to historic preservation, and I appreciate that. I'm not gonna mince words here. I'm gonna call it what it is. And you know, you and I have talked about on this show about, as a young person in this administration, we look at economic development a little bit differently. We look at quality of place a little bit differently. We know we have to get more young people and professionals to call Frankfort home if we want to survive in the long term. We have to build workforce, we have to retain workforce, and we have to grow the workforce. And this fight, this open scuttle that occurred, was very much, I believe, a philosophical conversation over doing things the way we've always done them in the city of Frankfort, not thinking about the big picture, keeping the status quo, not wanting to rock any boats, or are we going to push back against the good old boy network? Are we going to push back against the old guard? Are we going to say, listen, if we want to survive, folks, we've got to think about things differently, we've got to attract new types of investment in our community, and we have to act on that in a very, very prudent manner. And quick manner in the years to come. And so at the base layer of why that decision was made, those thoughts revolve around it. And the actions over the past 4 or 5 months was just something that I needed to address. Ironman Properties, from the beginning of the Nickel Plate Flats project, since day one, the Historic Preservation Commission has been involved through their president being involved in those meetings. And I can tell you that it's sad what happened, because Ironman Properties, when they came to the table for that project, they didn't say, this is the project we want to ram through. This is the project we want in Frankfort, and it's going to be our way or the highway. They never said that. They said, listen, we're going to challenge you all to think about architecture in a little bit different way, but at the end of it, if you want us to do things a certain way, we'll do that. And unfortunately, the first official meeting that Ironman had with the whole HPC, the whole public process, that meeting took place on April 19th. From April 19th to August 16th, Ironman did not hear anything back from the Historic Preservation Commission. They didn't receive any official certificate of appropriateness. They didn't receive any official written communication. So they had really nothing to go off of in their design process other than the conversations and the memories of what took place on that day. And so that lapse in communication, that complete breakdown of communication and professionalism, does not line up with this Frankfort's open for business approach. And then a second thing that occurred was, I believe, an illegal meeting occurred. A meeting was advertised to be in a certain location. It was not held in that location. It was held in a different location, within the same building, but a different room. And, you know, if I were to do that, I'd be skewered in the public, and rightfully so. Public participation, you need to know where to go if you want to make your voice be heard for a meeting. And I don't know if anyone missed that meeting with it being held in a different location. They wanted to come. I don't know if that happened. It very well could have happened. And then, last but not least, the way that this developer was treated through this process, things that were said, the tone it was set in, it was just inexplicable, and it was unprofessional, and I had to step in and make a decision. So for those reasons, I made a tough decision, and that's what I'm hired to do. But again, I appreciate everything those individuals did, and we're going to pick up, we're going to move forward. Nickel Plate Flats is going to be a beautiful building. The entire north facade on that building is going to be bricked, just like the Historic Preservation Commission wanted. to happen. And I believe if good communication were there, like that board should be doing, I believe that that result would have occurred a long, long time ago.
The two men who were fired say they were trying to make sure that that building had a similar look to Old Stoney, which it's near, so that it fits in, so that it was made of a high-quality material. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I just don't think that argument holds any water because, again, from the very beginning, Ironman Properties was up front and said that, listen, if you all want us to do things a certain way, we will. And that position has been vindicated because Ironman Properties has done exactly what they said they were going to do, and they're bricking the entire north facade of this property, which is what that HPC pushed for. What I take fence against is this complete breakdown of communication in the fact that the HPC did not communicate at all for close to 5 months with a developer that's going to be bringing a $7 million investment to downtown Frankfort. And then when they find out that things aren't exactly what they thought they were going to be, they turn this into a public scene, a public circus, and that misrepresents our city. When we're very professional, we like to handle things very well with developers, and this developer is doing exactly what the HPC called for from the beginning, and that's why I had to make this decision, and I believe it will be best in the long run.
You've, of course, mentioned the Nickel Plate Flats a number of times on this program, and obviously it's a product you are proud of and you are looking forward to having in your community. How do you balance a desire to get it done as quickly as possible on budget, all of those considerations, with the commissioner's concerns that they might have had, which might make the process a little longer, a little more expensive, things like that? How do you balance all of that?
Well, the county has been a great partner with this. You know, we worked with the county on the land swap in regards to swapping the back seven holes of our golf course, which was previously owned by the county, with a small chunk of the parking lot that the city owned that was adjacent to their lot that will help service Nickel Plate Flats. And so we made that property swap. We've deeded that property over to the county. The commissioner signed that document. And now Ironman Properties will be working with the county to actually invest several hundred thousand dollars into that parking lot to upgrade it, to make it botanical, to make it walkable, to make it well-lit, to make it feel antique-ish, just like the Historic Preservation Commission would like to see our downtown become. And, you know, this is how Ironman's acted since the beginning. And without the county, without our county commissioners, this project would not be happening right now. So you know, I thank Josh Hewitts and Steve Woods and Scott Shoemaker for their support in this. And in terms of the timing, the time is now for Frankfort. If we don't do something differently, if we don't push back against the good old boy network, the way things have always been done, then Frankfort won't survive. And the people elected me because they wanted to see change. I'm doing things that I talked about during those campaigns because I hold those promises very near and dear to my heart. And this luxury apartment complex in the downtown will help revitalize our downtown, will be a key strategic point that we'll be able to check the box off next to in terms of our downtown revitalization plan. And I believe this property is going to attract young people back to our city to live, work, and play, which is exactly what we need for economic development. Because, again, going back to this bigger picture, if we don't attract workers, then you know what? We might as well quit trying to get industry to come to this community, because if they don't have the workforce to pull from and that workforce isn't trained and retained, then we're dead in the water. So that's what we're working towards.
So lastly, the two men who are no longer on the Historic Preservation Commission also have talked about the idea of which is the right set of meeting minutes, their recollection of it or your recollection of it. They say that they've even gone so far as to, one of them to say that they think you may have fabricated a set of meeting minutes, and now they plan to take you to court, which of course will cost the city money and legal fees and things like that. How would you, if you have to, show a judge that what you did was right?
Oh, goodness. That, I've got to tell you, that's just ridiculous. I mean, it's an absolute red herring. And unfortunately, these gentlemen, there's absolutely no fact behind what they're saying, and we know this to be true, and that can be proved. But you know what? I think it's really a moot point, because those meeting minutes didn't end up having anything to do with the final decision that was made. And the final decision that was made was, Ironman Properties agreed with everything the HPC said, and now they're dumping even more money into this project to brick the entire north facade of the wall. So these individuals are getting exactly what they asked for from the very beginning, and they can get down into these logistics. But again, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. We're beyond that at this point in time. Those things are absolutely not true. And what I'm focused on creating good processes that treat developers in a respectful, professional manner, that we communicate in an appropriate amount of time, and we don't let 4 or 5 months go by before we send a written piece of communication to them. Those things aren't acceptable, and they don't send the message that Frankfurt is open for business. An illegal meeting was held. I have a written document into the Indiana Public Access Counselor, and I believe that my charge will be vindicated, and they will find this information to be correct. And these are why I made the decision that I made, and I firmly stand beside that decision.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfurt Mayor Chris McBarnes. This show has been pre-recorded, so we cannot take your phone calls. Send emails at ask@wbaa.org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter if you have questions. So the city's utility service board, we didn't get to this last month, approved a small increase in the per gallon wastewater fee. Can you tell me what precipitated that?
Sure. So the state of Indiana has put new requirements on our wastewater supply that we are to remove more phosphorus from our wastewater supply. And this chemical is built up, this organic chemical is built up through many of the household items that we use when we wash our hair. We wash off in the shower, and they go down the drain, and eventually they go to one location or another, and they wind up at the wastewater treatment plant. And so there is going to be significant additional cost to go in and treat this chemical properly, and we'll use a compound called alum to remove this from our wastewater supply. So that is what precipitated this minor increase in fees. It was presented to the city council. The city council agreed and voted on it unanimously. But, you know, to a certain degree, it was an unfunded state mandate, and those are things that we continue to fight. Those are things that you and I have talked about on the show before, and it's important why we stay in good communication with our state representatives, our senators, and we let them know how decisions that are made on the state level directly end up affecting local communities and then our ability to fund these mandates. So that's why that occurred.
So the board also wants to add an additional fee for companies that use a large amount of water, in other words, sort of paying for what it would cost to remediate their wastewater back down to IDEM's approved level. Do you think that's a good move?
I do. I think you've got to be very fair when you talk about utility rates and then the different classes of users. You know, and you and I had this discussion when we made an adjustment on the electric rate increase. You know, it wasn't fair to make a resident that lives, you know, in the northwest or southeast portion of our city pay the same freight that industries are paying, because it's a totally different set of circumstances. So, yeah, I think it is. Obviously, those industries are going to have much more discharge. We have wet industries in our industrial park that, you know, are building up BODs and large amounts of discharge and then pushing it out towards us. I think we need to have conversations with our industrial leaders and explain to them exactly why this decision is being made. Because, let's be honest, overhead costs, utilities costs, they directly impact an industry's decision to either come to this community or expand. So we've got to continue to keep a good pulse on that, and that's the reason why you know, we chose to do away with unnecessary fees like tap fees when it comes to our water or wastewater, or unnecessary stormwater fees, and we dramatically reduce those. So some things are being adjusted in certain areas upwards, and other things have been adjusted in a downward fashion, and we hope that balances things out and keeps Frankfurt competitive in terms of economic growth in the long run.
That's what I was going to ask you next, is do you worry at all that might be a hindrance in getting more investment in the community?
Well, I think it's something that's necessary. Again, it's an unfunded state mandate. It's another piece of bureaucracy and regulation that, for whatever reason, and I'm sure that, you know, plenty of due process was put into that, so I don't want to cast any stones, but it's an unfunded state mandate. And now we have to step up as a community and figure out a way to get it done and actually implement it. And I think in the big picture, we've got to be incredibly careful in adjusting these rates, because it does affect how industries look at a community. I think we're still very, very much competitive when you compare what people are charged here in regards to industry to other communities. I think we're very competitive, and I think if industries came in and put pencil to paper, they'd find that out, and we want them to know that message. But we still need to keep an eye on that and cut back where we can to make sure that we keep those industries in a position that they can hire more workers and retain the workers they currently have.
Just a couple more questions in our last 3 minutes or so. The county over the summer started spending almost $1 million on road work it had planned to do. And though we have talked a lot about how bad your city's roads have been and what you've been trying to do with them, it seems like the county's roads might be even worse. There's like a 10-point scale in which roads are rated. More than half of all of the county's miles are rated on a 1 or a 2 on this 10-point scale. I imagine that cannot be good for you leading the largest municipality in the county.
Well, I think our county, just like the city, we've got some work to do. And this is exactly why I think the state made the drastic decisions they made this past session, which I supported. Our roads and our infrastructure, that's economic development. And economic development and more investment that comes into a community grows our local assessed value. And if we grow our local assessed value, we're able to drive down tax rates and the tax burden on the citizen that pays property taxes, which property taxes fund the great majority of local government. And so, you know, we know now why the state made their decision, and I don't think Clinton County and Frankfort are alone. We're not on an island here. There's dozens and dozens, I'd say the great majority of the counties in this state that are feeling the same pinch. And so today at 4 p.m., by the time this show airs, our governor, Eric Holcomb, will have made an announcement from Jasper, Indiana, on the Community Crossings Matching Grant, and I can't wait to see how we did. I sat down personally and put together 21 grant requests for 21 different streets here in the city, asking for approximately $358,000 to $68,000 right in that neighborhood, and we'll match that dollar to dollar on a local level. So I hope, Stan, the next month when I'm on your show, I hope I'm able to report that we'll be doing here in the city of Frankfort close to $800,000 worth of work in terms of reclamite treatment and full-depth milling and paving on several streets here in the city.
Sounds like you might have gotten a heads up that Frankfort has something coming to it.
I didn't know. I got a release from the Indiana Department of Transportation, I believe it was, stating that Governor Holcomb would be making the announcement today at 4. Again, by the time this show airs, it will have happened a little under 24 hours ago. But no, I know nothing, and I'm kind of like a kid at Christmas right now. I'm just waiting to open that big present, and hopefully today at 4 we'll find something out, and I'm sure there's a lot of other community leaders who are going to be doing the same thing.
Real quick, just in the last 30 seconds or so, do you think you and the county are making any headway? Are you able to actually get ahead of your cycles of having to repave and redo these roads?
It's going to take a while, Stan. It's going to take a while. We've got several miles of roadway in our city rated at 2 or lower. But this year is going to be our first year not only doing full mill repaving and milling, but also treating roads that aren't so far gone with a product called Reclamite, which will extend their life. So we're getting to that point in time. We're not only rebuilding roads, but we're maintaining our good roads, and I think that's a good sign for the future.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Stan, thank you. God bless.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can send questions at any time to any of our mayors. The email address, ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.